This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Tour de France has been called the most sadistic sporting event in the world. My guest, Greg LeMond, is a three-time winner. Two of his wins came after he nearly died in a hunting accident. LeMond also won the world title twice. LeMond announced his retirement from cycling in December of 1994 after he was diagnosed with a rare disease that was depleting the energy he needed to compete. On June 8th, he'll be inducted into the U.S. Cycling Hall of Fame in Pennsylvania. Greg LeMond's name is nearly synonymous with cycling in America. The sport had few American fans in the late 70s when he started competing. In fact, he spent most of his career in France, riding with French teams. His stunning achievements popularized the sport here. He was the first American to win the Tour de France. It's a three-week-long race, comprised of sprints and day-long races through the Alps, the Pyrenees, and the French countryside. Cyclists ride in teams. The fastest cyclist on the team is the leader. The team supports the leader by blocking opponents and letting the leader draft off them. I'll let LeMond describe what that means.
Drafting means getting behind somebody's slipstream. Somebody else is breaking the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And in cycling, because an athlete or cyclist can push themselves at a high enough speed, it creates drafting. And so when you get to race speed at 25 miles per hour to 30 miles an hour, the energy savings are so tremendous by drafting that you can save up to 30% of your energy. And that's why in cycling, it's not always the strongest who wins. It's sometimes the smartest guy who wins tactically, because somebody who's really strong might be kind of stupid, might not know how to race tactically and expend a lot of energy. And somebody who has a little bit less talent but has intelligence can tactically save himself and read a race and then end up getting to the end and sprinting past the so-called strong rider.
I imagine the most difficult part of the Tour de France is the part going through the Alps or the Pyrenees. And you're very good at the mountainous part of it. Is that, in fact, the really most difficult part?
It is. I think that's what, in cycling, it's such a drafting sport that it's basically a race waiting to find out when there's a side wind or a hill to kind of separate a strong rider from a weaker rider, because somebody who's a little bit weaker can sit on and draft and save about 30% of their energy. So that's why the Alps and the Pyrenees are so important in separating kind of what the winners from the losers. And that is what makes the Tour de France or the Alps. The mountains are incredibly steep. They always try to compare the Rocky Mountains to the French Alps or the Pyrenees, and there's no comparison. Most of the mountains made in the United States are made to remove snow, and they build them at about a 6% grade. And most of the European mountains are built between 10 and 15% grades. And that's in their days, we'll have four or five mountain passes in one race. And they're not raced at a slow touring pace. They're raced at a very high intense intensity.
What about going downhill?
That's what I like about it. I started off downhill skiing, so I think that's what got me into cycling was I would climb a mountain and get to have a blast flying down the hills, just like downhill skiing. But we travel at incredibly high speeds, 60. I've had recorded up to 75 miles an hour. And if you understand those 75 mile an hour on a very narrow, bumpy road, with a lot of switchbacks, that's a very high speed. But probably the unique part about descending in Europe is just the amount of hairpins and the amount of and the steepness of the climb. And that's where it's important to be a good descender. You have to be kind of a very tactical rider, but also a good bike handler. In addition to having good physical ability.
Now, when you're traveling on level terrain, a lot of the race, the cyclists travel in a pack. I'm wondering what it's like to be in a pack of other cyclists, how close you are to the other cyclists. Is it claustrophobic?
I think in terms of what makes the Tour de France really difficult, but one of the elements that makes the Tour de France so difficult is that it's a peloton. They call it pack racing, and the flat days are also incredibly intense. I've averaged one race. I did 160 miles in 1991 Tour de France, where we averaged 31 miles an hour. That was an average speed over 160 miles an hour. That means we had to be going in bursts of 40, 45 miles an hour. And the only way to do that is to have a very competitive, very well-conditioned athletes attacking all day long. And the reaction time in bike racing is very, very short because you are literally inches from other bike riders. And you're usually on open roads and traveling in the peloton at 30 to 40 miles an hour. And you'll be making a right-left turn. You'll have these new traffic circles in Europe that are creating a tremendous amount of crashes. But that's what also is the thrill of cycling, because it's usually people think of the downhills as the dangerous part in a mountain, but or a bike race, but the actual downhill is usually you're descending by yourself. You're dictating your speed, how fast you want to take the corners. If you want to stay within the pack and stay with the race, you have to stay within the pack. And if you want to do that, you have to sometimes take risk riding behind people. And that's what, usually when crashes happen.
Have you ever been in a pack when there was a multi-vehicle crash, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. I've had 1988, that's when I injured a tendon and ended up having surgery about 4 months later. It was in a very impressive crash because we were racing in Belgium on a fairly wide road, but these races in Belgium, part of the obstacles that try to make the race hard, they usually go from a wide road to a very small, narrow cobble road that will go up a mile, 18% grade. And in order to get there, it's positioning. You have to be in the top 10 of the race, or else you'll miss what they call the break. And so the speeds are usually very high, 45 miles an hour on the flats, and everybody's trying to crowd to the front. And those are usually the periods when it's most dangerous in cycling. And somebody got his front wheel caught in the center of the road. They are concrete roads. Literally took down about 70 riders at 45 miles an hour. I remember doing two flips, getting up and amazed. My helmet was cracked, but amazed that I wasn't hurt, and stood up and looked down and saw somebody's thigh split open from his hip to his kneecap right down to the bone. So I've seen some pretty good crashes. Fortunately, I've been in very few serious crashes. I've broken a collarbone, broken a wrist. Part of not crashing is being in good shape so you can always stay in the front. So usually when I have had bad crashes, it's because I'm not in great shape.
Well, when you had that crash that you just described where your helmet was dented, did you get right back on your bike and keep up?
That one, after seeing the guy's leg split down to the bone, and I was already about 4 minutes behind the racing peloton, I did not finish, no. But usually, yes, in order to finish a race like the Tour de France, you don't have a choice but to get up. The 1990, when I won the Tour de France in 1990, I dislocated my middle finger, hit a hole, pothole, ran into a 70-year-old woman on the side of the road, knocked her down, had to pull my finger back, put it back in place, and race up two mountains to L'Alpe d'Huez, and ended up getting second in that race. But it was a sure adrenaline rush. When you crash, you actually feel better because you've got so much adrenaline running through you.
Well, I bet you do have a lot of adrenaline, so you probably don't even feel the pain.
No, you don't. You only feel that after you get done. It's usually get up. It's instinctive. Get up and get on your bike and try to stay with the race.
Greg LeMond is my guest, and he's three-time winner of the Tour de France, and he retired from cycling in December of 94. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Greg LeMond, three-time winner of the Tour de France. Greg LeMond, you retired from cycling in December of 1994 for health reasons. What is the illness that caused your retirement?
It's a rare muscular disease called mitochondrial myopathy. Your mitochondria are little cells that are within your muscle that basically are your engines for producing energy. They produce something called ATP, which contracts your muscle. I had a hunting accident in 1987 where I was shot. I have about 40 lead pellets in me. So the last 3 years of my career, I just always struggled from fatigue, exhaustion. And finally, in 1994, I quit the Tour de France after 6 days with the idea I knew that something was wrong. And I came back to the United States because every doctor in Europe just did a blood test, said, you're just getting old. It's in your head. You're really not motivated. Why don't you just quit right now? And I wanted to race. I was dying to continue racing. I was dying to actually prove myself as a potential Tour de France winner more than three times. I came back here and couldn't find anything. I spent a month doing every type of test that a body could go through and found nothing. And finally, my doctor here in Minneapolis, Dr. Tabi, finally suggested there's only one thing we could do is do a muscle biopsy. And so we did a muscle biopsy and came back with a test result that indicated a muscle disease called mitochondrial myopathy. And what it is you have the mitochondria, that, which I said produce your energy. I have probably 10 or 15% of my mitochondria are deformed or non-functional mitochondria. And it's a genetic disease. It's passed on by the mother to the kids. And I, at the time when we did the test, we could not find any enzyme deficiency, and that was always the missing link. And we thought my mitochondria was caused by possibly environmental problems like lead. Lead would there have been tests shown in animals that lead would cause damage to the mitochondria, but we could not find any lead. So we finally got back this last January. The enzyme report that took about a year and a half to do almost, and found one enzyme that was deficient. I don't have the fatal mitochondrial myopathy. Typically, it's fatal in young kids, but it is a degenerative muscle disease that might affect my energy and output longer term, maybe when I'm older. Right now, I don't feel it. I feel fine. I think the only reason I felt any kind of signs of this disease was at the world-class level. I think that if I was somebody sitting behind an office desk, I would never know I have this disease.
What was more depressing to you, to not be able to work up to par and not know why, or to get this diagnosis of a rare disease that basically told you you'll never be able to, you know, compete in cycling again?
Well, I think it was definitely more frustrating for me to work so hard and not know why. And, you know, athletes are kind of proud people in a way. And I've always realized you're only as good as your last race, but my last 3 years were very poor. So I was really quite a lousy racer when I was racing. So definitely not knowing why I was racing poorly, it was actually a relief to find out that it wasn't in my mind. It wasn't because I wasn't motivated. I still hear rumors of cycling critics, coaches, and other riders saying, well, I made up this disease. I can't imagine anybody making up a muscular disease to explain a lack of performance. It does hurt a little bit because I've heard stuff from other people that it does hurt. So I haven't made this up. I have medical tests that proof of it's like a broken leg. You either got a broken leg or you don't.
Right. I think probably the most remarkable thing about your career is that you twice won the Tour de France after a hunting accident in which you were nearly killed. You were hunting with a couple of people from your family when your brother-in-law accidentally shot you. What happened?
Well, it was my first time turkey hunting. I've been hunting quail and pheasant most of my life, and I was actually more into trap shooting, target shooting, and so I knew gun safety. My brother-in-law went hunting for the very first time. Really didn't have any experience, and we were camouflaged, and we split up, and I was somewhat hidden and in front of bushes, and he came up behind, and I went to stand up, and he accidentally shot me. And
did he think you were an animal, or?
Yeah, he just shot at movement, and that's what happened. And I laid there for about 45 minutes, and until we finally got the ambulance to come. And if it wasn't for a helicopter ambulance, I probably wouldn't be here. So I'm a lucky person.
You lost, what, about 3/4 of your blood?
Yeah. I really needed a blood transfusion. It was at the time when the surgeon, Dr. Beal in UC Davis, had a few patients, or at least the hospital had a few patients that had blood transfusions and were diagnosed with HIV. I did not get a blood transfusion at the time because of that. I did get a saline-type solution to help spread my blood through my body, but it was the right decision. So I had a great surgeon.
Where were you shot?
I was shot throughout my back. I have pellets that are literally millimeters from my spinal cord. I have three within the lining of my heart. I have four or five in my liver. I had a few that pierced right through my kidneys. I had them all over. My uncle said I look like how you puncture a fluid hose where the water just kind of squirts out. It was squirting out of as each heartbeat about 12 inches off out my neck. So I don't remember much, but your body has a way of protecting itself going into shock. But it wasn't painful. Getting shot wasn't painful. It was definitely the surgery and the recovery that was extremely painful.
I'm wondering if your work as an athlete helped you endure the pain because you had to endure a lot of pain as a cyclist.
I think it did, but I could tell you that the pain I endured after that on my bike was a lot easier than the surgical pain.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably helped my cycling more than anything. But I think, you know, I'm a very determined person, and
apparently,
yeah, and I really never, you know, I could even justify. I remember thinking, well, maybe it was good I got shot. I was getting kind of tired of cycling, and now this is going to give me a year break. I thought that. I had a habit, and I think it's helped me through so much of my career, of taking bad situations and turning them into positive situations. I can look back throughout my career, and anything that's ever happened to me in a negative way, I've been able to turn it, you know, hey, well, it's not so bad. You know, maybe it happened for a good reason, and it's helped me through a lot of down periods.
At what point in your recovery did you decide that you could start training again and seriously entertain the idea of entering the Tour de France again?
Well, I had a very awkward situation because cycling is a professional sport. In order to race in Europe, you need to be on a team. In 1987, I was at the end of my three-year contract that I signed with the French team, and I really had to, when I went in for my intestinal block, I had them remove my appendix because I did not want to go back in. But I had to tell the European press that, yes, I had surgery, I had my appendix out, and that's why I did it. No, that's not why I did it, but it was almost, I hate to say it, but a little of a white lie because I needed to get onto a team. And I had to go through, already the European teams were just, you know, I'll never come back. I had to act like I was back, and when I wasn't even ready to race, I had to go back to Europe and start races where I started a 100-mile race and made it 5 miles. It was the most miserable time of my career. And the only reason I had to do that is because the European teams were so fickle. They, you know, just weren't ready to invest the time and the money to get me back to where I could win the Tour de France. I knew from what the doctor said that nothing was touched. My heart did have lead pellets, but it wasn't damaged. My lungs were fine. Everything was fine. I wasn't missing any part. So it just took time. It just took patience. None of the European teams had that. And so I had to bluff my way through about 2 years until I did win the Tour de France. And I almost ended up quitting the sport about 3 months before my 1989 victory, because it was so frustrating to have been at the top of the sport in 1986, to be the back of at the bottom of the sport. And actually, I mean, I remember racing races where, I mean, I've had riders kind of laughing at me, kind of chuckling, God, Greg, you're looking terrible. So it was very humiliating. But I never once doubted that I'd come back, although my patience was getting tested. Every week that I raced, it was getting tested until 1989.
Greg LeMond will be inducted into the U.S. Cycling Hall of Fame June 8th. He'll be back in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with America's most famous cyclist, Greg LeMond. He won the grueling Tour de France three times. He was shot and nearly died in a hunting accident in 1987. LeMond made a stunning comeback with his 1989 Tour de France victory. He won the race by 8 seconds, the narrowest margin in the history of the race. I asked him when he realized he was going to win.
Yes, because when I started the Tour de France in 1989, my wildest dreams would have been top 20 in what they call a stage win, win one of the races of the 3 weeks. After I got into it, I won the first big time trial. That's a race where you race by yourself by minutes over Fignon and the other competitors. And I realized that at that point that I probably could be in the top five. And then when I went through the Pyrenees, I shot for the top three. And I led the race already a week at that point, and I lost the lead mainly because I really didn't have the right team support. I wasted a lot of energy chasing breaks down. But going into the last day of the Tour de France, I physically felt as good as I felt any race in the Tour de France. And I knew my competitor, Laurent Fignon. I knew that I was a better time trialist. And I guess my attitude that last day was, I made it this far. I'm in second place. I should as equally be in first place, and I'm not going to give it up. And I think he lost because he was way too confident. He thought he actually congratulated me the day before on my second place. And I remember saying to myself, boy, this guy's full of himself. So nobody else believed I could win. I actually beat Laurent Fignon, who was leading at the time. He won the Tour of Italy about a month and a half before. I beat him by about a minute 30 seconds in a little bit longer time trial, but I calculated the morning of that my physical ability is better, I have better equipment, and I should beat him by easily 10 seconds. So I had the confidence, but it still took total concentration and total motivation. I've never been so psyched up in a race as that last day.
I'm thinking two things here. One is how absolutely extraordinary it is, the comeback that you made. I'm also thinking about your brother-in-law and how horrible he must have felt after he shot you.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It had to be traumatic for him because I think for 2 years, every time I raced a race, it was Greg LeMond who was shot by his brother-in-law.
Right.
You know, he lived with it. And I think his biggest relief, I saw him after the Tour de France in 1989, his biggest relief came when I won the Tour de France, because it was lifted from his shoulders that every time I raced a bad race, I had poor performance, he felt it was his responsibility. And, you know, I would not wish that upon anybody.
Greg LeMond is my guest, three-time winner of the Tour de France. He retired from cycling in December of 1994. How does it feel now? You've been retired for nearly a year and a half. Do you miss it terribly?
Oh, I miss it. I mean, I miss, but I don't miss the way I raced the last 3 years. I actually miss the way I rode before my hunting accident.
Uh-huh.
I always say I had 6 years as a professional from 1981 to 1986, where I can only remember feeling physically bad for maybe 2 months in those 6 years. The 7 years after my hunting accident, or 8 years actually, it was 8 years after I raced after my hunting accident. I can only remember 4 months where I felt good. But
it's remarkable that it was that period where you actually kept winning. You know, you won twice.
That's what most people in America think. I mean, mm-hmm. because they see the Tour de France. But the Tour de France is one race
right.
in a whole season.
Right.
I ended up having, you know, I remember racing over 110 races in 1985, where any multi-day race, I was never out of the top three. In 1986, I was in the top three in every major race I entered in stage races. In 1989 and 1990, yes, I won the Tour de France, but I couldn't. That was my only result, and I still feel that even in those periods, I was not at my best. It wasn't like I was in 1986. 1986, I had such superior fitness and conditioning. And it's understandable. It took me 10 years of uninterrupted training to get to my first Tour de France victory in 1986. I was 25 years old. And that's where people were so unrealistic to think that I could get shot, lose almost all my muscle mass, have a right lung that that collapsed, had surgery, have 40 lead pellets in me, and only have a year and a half, or actually 1 year, to train and win the Tour de France. I had so many people impatient because I did race miserably in 1987, 1988. But if logically, if you look at it, there was a reason. But I just had I never regained the level of fitness that I ever had before my hunting accident. Although I had some of my most memorable periods, and I think they come from, you know, reaching such lows and then right. achieving such highs. I don't know if I'd change my career because I think it's also made me who I am. I don't regret anything. Every athlete has a little bit of pride and a little bit of goals that they set. And I think when I went into I never said this in the press, but in Europe, but I really had a goal of winning 5 or 6 tours. And I really felt I had the ability to do it. I made it to 3. I was 2nd in 1, which I really should have won, and 3rd in another. But I really had a goal of matching the European greats of 5 or 6 victories. Mm-hmm. And that's my only regret, is that I had two of my best years, 87, 88, kind of wiped away from me. And I do question if my health would have gone down like it has without the hunting accident.
You're going to be at the Olympics this year as a color commentator, yes?
I am, yeah.
Is it a great disappointment that you never made it there as a competitor? You wanted to go in 1980, but then there was the boycott. And after that, you became a pro. So,
when I was young, when I was, let's say, 19, 20, 21, when I was racing in Europe, the Tour de France is still the ultimate. I mean, I have to say, if I had a choice of a gold medal in the Olympics or a Tour de France, I'd choose the Tour de France. And I mm-hmm. think every cyclist in the peloton would do that. But when you're young, it's about the Tour de France. And as I got older, and it's also about, you know, making a living, trying to support yourself in the sport. My biggest regret is that I didn't make it to this 1996 Olympics. My goal was to have my last race at the Olympic road race and retire after that, and never made it. So, I mean, there's no doubt. And I think this is the first year that the best athletes in cycling are going to be competing. Up until then, it really was another whole different level. It'd be like taking college basketball compared to NBA. That was the difference in the level of competition, or even maybe high school basketball to the NBA, because almost all the top riders, by the time they're 20, 21, are turning pro. So the Olympics have traditionally had young riders, inexperienced, although good ones, but most of the good ones developed into great riders as they turn professional. So this is the first year that they're going to have the top riders in the Olympics, and I would really wish I could be there.
Greg LeMond, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I really appreciate it. I loved it.
Greg LeMond will be inducted into the U.S. Cycling Hall of Fame in Pennsylvania on Saturday. This is Fresh Air.